Welcome to another episode of the Cook, Eat, Nourish podcast with me, Fiona Staunton of Fiona's Food for Life. Today, I'm talking with Susan Horgan from Food First Health. We talk all about food for your brain health, your gut-brain connection, and food and lifestyle. She also has a giveaway of 5 lunches that you can create ahead of time, and as always, her 3 top tips. I hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome, Susan, to my podcast. Would you like to introduce yourself to my audience?
Yeah. Hi, everybody. My name is Susan Horgan. I am an NTOI registered nutritional therapist. And over the last 3 years, I have kind of really focused in on female hormones and then more specifically on perimenopause and menopause. I suppose the main reason being that I'm kind of at that stage myself. I'm going through it, so I find I can relate really well to people's experiences and kind of issues or challenges that they come up against. So it's just a real passion area for me. I've also worked with women in terms of just general sort of PMS, endometriosis, fibroids, and things like that as well. So it's really the female hormone specialty kind of is what sort of lights me up, and it's my real passion when it comes to nutrition.
Great. And how long have you been working as a nutritional therapist?
So I am just coming up on 3.5 years now. So qualified just as COVID was starting to hit, unfortunately, or fortunately, because actually it opened up the door to doing a lot more online work, which I really, really enjoy. It kind of fits in with my lifestyle really well and kind of helps to give me a little bit of that work-life balance that we all crave so much.
And I love the name of your business as well, Food First Health. I mean, that's just totally resonates with me anyway. Yeah.
I think it was something that was really important that I wanted to get across, because it you know, nutrition is so important for every aspect of your health, not just, you know, like long-term health kind of promotion, but just in terms of how you feel every day on a day-to-day basis, in terms of your energy, your mood, your motivation and things like that. I always feel that if you eat well, those things are so much better, and you just feel generally so much better. So that's why when I work with a client, I always focus first on those little changes that can bring the biggest bang for the buck, if you like, in terms of helping them to feel better. Because I think when you feel better, you're more open then to making more change. You feel motivated to stick with the changes and continue to build those habits. So
absolutely. And Susan, one of the areas that I find you know, really is quite important and quite interesting is the whole thing about the brain. So often we will find during stages of perimenopause and menopause, things like brain fog and mood swings and irritability and anxiety. I mean, I hear so many people who have said, I'm not normally an anxious person, but I'm just so anxious these days. Would you be able to educate us and talk to us a little bit about foods and the brain and how that all works?
Yeah. So, they're definitely hugely common symptoms that I see with my clients. And I've certainly started to see in myself as well, the brain fog and a little bit of irritability or rage sometimes. So the brain is actually, we think of our sex hormones, estrogen and progesterone, as being, you know, predominantly linked to like our periods or getting pregnant or whatever. But actually, they have a huge role in our brain function. And Lisa Moscone, who's quite an eminent neuroscientist, has done some research in the last few years around menopause and the impact that it has on the brain. And estrogen in particular is used in the brain to help the brain to generate energy from glucose that we eat. And as we start to lose estrogen, or when we're going through, particularly in early perimenopause, when estrogen is really fluctuating from high to low, when you're in those periods of low estrogen, the brain can suffer in terms of its energy levels. So there's some research that shows sometimes actually energy levels can drop around 25% in the brain. So when your brain doesn't have that extra energy, you can imagine the impact that it has on your cognitive function, you know, being able to think clearly, being able to concentrate, your memory, obviously. So there's lots of things then in terms of from a food perspective that we can look at. So when I'm looking to work with a client who's experiencing a lot of these neurological kind of symptoms, and the anxiety as well that you sort of mentioned there is definitely a common one, I tend to focus very much on sort of a Mediterranean style approach. And the main reason for that is when I look at food and diet, I always want the client to be eating the biggest variety of foods they possibly can be. I don't like to cut out food groups or anything else. I believe in a nice balanced plate of food. And I think the Mediterranean diet very much aligns with that sort of approach. It's really, really rich in phytoestrogens. And I know you had lots of stuff on your Instagram recently about phytoestrogens, but they can really help the brain in terms of providing that little boost of estrogen. It's not in any way the same as the estrogen that we produce in our bodies, but it can just kind of help to include some of those in the diet. So that's things like your flax seeds, sesame seeds, your legumes, berries, whole grains. And if you're a fan of chocolate, even dark chocolate has a little bit of phytoestrogens in it too. So you can still have a little bit of what you fancy too and be doing yourself good. The next thing that is quite plentiful in the Mediterranean diet is healthy fats. So they do eat a good amount of fish, and particularly oily fish, salmon, mackerel, sardines, things like that. They're very high in omega-3s, and our brain is 60 to 70% fat. So we need to make sure that we're constantly providing a source of those healthy fats. Olive oil in particular is a really good source of some omega-3s, but lots of monounsaturated fats as well. And they can just help to keep inflammation under control as well. And if you have a lot of inflammation in the body for various different reasons, inflammation can also affect the brain. So when we have inflammation in the body gives off chemicals that travel around in our bloodstream, and they can also travel all the way up to the brain and cause inflammation in the brain too. So that's keeping inflammation under control is a really positive thing there.
And Susan, if we go back to the fish just for a minute, you mentioned the salmon, mackerel and sardines.
Yeah.
My understanding was that the salmon doesn't have quite as much of the omega-3, that if you're consuming your fish for your omega-3s, it really needs to be more along the mackerel and sardine side of things. Is that your understanding, or are there different studies that would indicate that the salmon is just as good?
Well, I would always say like the sardines and mackerel have a much stronger taste. They have a lot more bones, so they tend not to be as palatable for some people, particularly if they're not hugely fish eaters. So I would always say salmon is like a nice starting point. It does still have a good amount of omega-3 in it. So I would rather a client eat salmon if that's the only oily fish they like, rather than not eat oily fish at all. I wasn't aware that salmon had less omega-3 in it. I'm going to definitely have to go and look that one up and research that a little bit. But I do find people kind of go, ooh, mackerel or sardines when I talk about it. So for me, I would rather, like I say, get the omega-3s, whatever amount they're in the salmon, rather than not eat the other ones because they taste very strong or you don't like all the bones or whatever in it.
Right.
So yeah, that would kind of where I would come from with a client.
Yeah, it's so important to meet them where they're at and to try and
100%. Yeah.
Okay. So we had done the sorry, I interrupted you there. You were
no,
talking
you're fine.
Mediterranean, you'd done the phytoestrogens and the healthy fats. So what's next?
Yeah, so I was chatting about inflammation, and actually when you look at the Mediterranean diet, they do really like to include lots of herbs and spices in their food as well. And herbs and spices can be a real powerhouse in terms of anti-inflammatory benefits. They can be really helpful in terms of your digestion. So things like oregano in particular, adding oregano to your meals can be really helpful in terms of supporting healthy digestion. Things like cinnamon actually is really, really powerful for insulin sensitivity. So helping to manage and regulate your blood sugars. And when I work with perimenopausal women, the Mediterranean diet nearly does it by default, but looking at making sure that we're balancing blood sugars is quite important, because again, estrogen plays a little bit of a role in helping our bodies to be sensitive to the effects of insulin. So for anyone who doesn't know, insulin is the hormone that our body releases when we eat a meal that has carbohydrates in it to help balance our blood sugar. We become a little less sensitive to that when we move closer to that low estrogen state of menopause. So anything we can do to help boost our sensitivity to insulin can be really, really helpful. Because if our blood sugar is, if we're having really high peaks in our blood sugar, and then what goes up obviously must come down, we end up with the dips. And I think we've all experienced those 3 p.m. slumps, a little bit of the hanger, the reaching for something quick and easy to eat. And that can be just because your blood sugar dips. So that, when it comes to talking about the brain, the mood, those dips in the blood sugar really feed into that, like lack of energy, low mood, irritability. I definitely know I do get times where I would be a bit hangry when my blood sugar, you know, if I haven't eaten in a long period of time. So that's kind of a really important part of the kind of the overall picture. And again, that's why I really love that Mediterranean style, because it has that lovely balance of protein, healthy fats, whole grains, and kind of nice complex carbohydrates. So whole grains, your pulses, so things like chickpeas, chickpeas, lentils, beans, and starchy veg like butternut squash, sweet potatoes are all really, really good kind of carbohydrate type choices. So when you're looking at the carbohydrate that's going on your plate, choosing from any of those is really, really beneficial. So they provide fiber, which feeds your gut bacteria, but they are also much more slow releasing in terms of the energy that comes out of it. So helps to keep your energy consistent, but also helps to keep your mood consistent as well.
And Susan, you mentioned their whole grains. From the work that you do, what type of whole grains would you suggest for your clients?
So I tend to look at things like oats, not actually a grain, a pseudo grain, I suppose, but things like quinoa can be really helpful. It has a nice protein content, so it's kind of nice in terms of a grain to add in. Bulgur wheat can be a really nice one. Buckwheat, if people can find the buckwheat growths. Even whole wheat is a really nice addition. So like a proper whole wheat bread, not a kind of a brown sliced pan that you buy on the bread aisle of the supermarket, but a nice or spelt can be a nice option in terms of bread as well. If people like bread, that's kind of one I would tend to go with, sort of a rye sourdough or a spelt or something like that. But yeah, I mean, I don't really see that there's anything off limits. So brown rice, brown pasta, you know, just trying to make the best choices that you can, leaning towards less processed options. So, you know, things like maybe couscous, bulgur wheat, quinoa, brown rice, that sort of thing. And then mixing in your pulses. So adding beans or lentils to a salad can be a really nice way to get carbohydrates, but without what we traditionally see as carbohydrate, you know, like bread or and things like that. So okay, they would tend to be the ones I would opt for.
And was there any more you wanted to add on the brain and the food before we maybe talk about lifestyle?
No, I think that was it. I suppose there is also the kind of aspect of supporting the gut. So obviously including whole grains, lots of vegetables are going to be full of fiber, and fiber is what you need to support that healthy gut microbiome, keep the good guys that you want living in the gut really healthy and thriving, which helps to reduce the impact of any kind of less friendly bacteria that might make their way in there. There is more and more research and more science coming out about the link between the gut and your brain. You know, there's lots of talk about the gut-brain axis and how the two are constantly in communication. So the brain is always sending messages to the gut to find out what's going on. Is everybody happy down there? And then the gut equally sends messages back. So I would always ask a client, you know, when you get that gut feeling, or sometimes when you feel anxious, you get maybe diarrhea or you feel a bit nauseous. That's that intercommunication between the brain and the gut all the time. So the healthier you can keep your gut, the better. So like I said, lots of fiber rich foods, but also including some fermented foods. So I know you did a great video on how to make the kefir recently. So things like kefir, sauerkraut, kimchi, they provide more numbers and diversity of bacteria into your diet than you'll ever get from any probiotic capsule, if you can stomach them. Some people find them quite an acquired taste, but if you can manage to introduce them. And I think the kefir is actually a really nice sort of entry level probiotic food, because it does kind of just taste like sort of natural yogurt, or a little stronger natural yogurt. So that's kind of one, if a client is a bit wary, that would be kind of my starting point for them in terms of introducing some probiotic foods. The gut is responsible for producing a huge amount of our serotonin, which is a neurotransmitter, which goes directly to the brain. And actually, serotonin is what we kind of call our feel good neurotransmitter. It's what gives us that bit of pep in our step, feel happy and at ease. The gut bacteria also produce a little bit of GABA, which is like our calming neurotransmitter. So that kind of helps us to relax and feel more chilled. So keeping the beneficial bacteria that help to produce those neurotransmitters in the gut healthy also helps to get those feel good and positive and chilled messages going to the brain. So that's kind of the other aspect of it, is kind of really focusing on gut health as well as that sort of overall Mediterranean style approach to your making up your plate.
Okay. And would you have useful advice as to how someone's plate might look? So people don't want to, necessarily measure out all of their portions, and they want to make food easy.
Yes.
Would you have a simple idea as to how people might look when they look at their plate to know and ask themselves, have I really got the right nutrition that I need for my brain?
Yes, 100%. So yeah, I know I don't have time to weigh out everything I eat, so I never expect it of my clients. So I always kind of use a really visual, I have a little picture that I send to clients. So I basically divide the plate into four sections, if you like. Now, you obviously don't have to lay your plate out like this, but it's just getting the idea right. So starting with the veg, I would always say to aim towards 40 to 45% of your plate being non-starchy vegetables. So that can be your salad-y stuff or your broccoli and peppers and onions. If you don't eat 45% of your plate right now, it's a goal to work towards. You don't need to put yourself under pressure to be doing it all immediately after you listen to the podcast. Aim to get to 45%. The next piece then is about protein. So I would always say about 25% of your plate should be protein. That can be animal or plant, whatever you enjoy eating. But a nice, good quality source of protein at each of your main meals is really important to help maintain your muscle mass. Then about 20% is those complex carbohydrates. So whether you choose pulses and legumes, starchy vegetables, or some whole grains, get those onto your plate, help to support your energy levels and provide lots of fiber, like I said, for those gut bacteria. And then about 10% should be your healthy fats. So that could be some avocado, it could be some olives, it might be a nice dressing that you make with some olive or flaxseed oil. It might be, if you're having oily fish, you have some lovely healthy fats there. Nuts and seeds, on your porridge, it might be adding nuts and seeds or things like that, or even putting some nuts and seeds over the top of a salad is delicious. It just adds lots of crunch and you're getting a little bit of extra protein and some nice healthy fats in there too. So that's how I tend to go about looking at what I call a balanced plate of food, if you like.
Great. Okay. Thank you for that. One of the recipes I do is the toasted sunflower and pumpkin seeds with a little bit of liquid aminos. And they're great because they can stay in a jar and stay by your, leave it by my salt and pepper. So you can just add it onto any different plate of salads or soups or anything like that. So it's ready to go. So
I even sometimes put a little drizzle of just flax oil on top of a bowl of soup. You get those lovely omega fats, and it adds a really nice sort of nutty flavor to the soup as well. It's a really lovely one.
Okay, great. I did buy a huge big thing of flaxseed oil because I thought, well, it's great. It's Irish. It's got a really good omega-3, omega-6 profile. I just don't like the taste of it.
I wouldn't use it in a dressing now, but when you put it on top of a soup, or sometimes I might make a dressing and do 2/3 olive oil and 1/3 flax, and it just tones down the kind of strong flavor a little bit. And I find I do a lovely quinoa salad, and I sometimes mix the oils like that, just to add, it does add a kind of a little undertone of kind of a nutty flavor.
Okay. Yeah. Good to know, because
give it a go. You don't want to waste it after buying it.
I know. Okay. So we've looked at the gut and brain and brain and food, food and lifestyle. Do you want to give us a little bit about information about how that might help us with all of this unusual symptoms that we might be experiencing with the, you know, the brain fog, the anxiety? Could you tell us a little bit about your guideline and with your clients and from your studies in food and lifestyle?
Yeah, so for me, the there's three really, but the first place port of call I generally have to go with clients first is stress. Stress is a huge one. I think perimenopause and menopause comes upon women when they're probably at the busiest point in their life. They're trying to have careers, they're trying to raise children, they might be looking after elderly or sick parents, and just generally trying to run a house and do it all. So stress can be a massive one. And as we start to lose progesterone has this lovely calming effect on the brain. And as we start to really gradually see our progesterone decline kind of throughout our 40s and all the way up to menopause, the loss of that progesterone kind of affects the centers of our brain that help us to cope with stress and also with sleep, which I'll talk about in a second. But so we can just feel sometimes that we actually can get a little bit more overwhelmed or feel less able to cope with stress than maybe we did, say, 12 months ago. Managing stress can be a massive one. The other thing is as there's a sort of a link between our estrogen and our stress hormone, cortisol. So they tend to work in opposition. So when our estrogen is high, it kind of brings our cortisol down a little bit. But when our estrogen starts to drop, our cortisol levels start to rise. So we're kind of getting the double whammy of losing progesterone, losing estrogen. So our cortisol starts to rise. So the key things then when it comes to stress for me is, number one, not stressing about trying to do all the like self-care things that we read and we see on Instagram. We don't all have time to do an hour's yoga or to do HIIT classes 5 days a week or, you know, do all the things. It's just about finding little pockets of time during the day. So I recently did a mindfulness coaching course. So to be able to teach people mindfulness. And one of the things we learned about was just even when you're standing washing your hands at the sink, rather than be thinking about the next 10 things you have to do, just stop, take a breath, and like smell the soap, feel the water on your hands, feel the temperature of the water. It might only take you 60 seconds, but just those 60 seconds of getting out of the head and into the physical body can just help to calm the nervous system, bring the cortisol levels down, just to give you a little bit of focus for the next 2 hours of your day. Sitting outside with your cup of coffee in the morning time, after you get the kids out or whatever it is you have to do, you've walked the dog or whatever it is, just take a seat, even if it's 3 minutes to take five sips of your coffee sitting out in the garden by yourself. So it is just those little snippets, if you can find them, rather than it having, it's like this massive thing in the back of your head, oh, well, I need to find an hour to go for a walk, or I have to, you know, because I know I don't always have time to find an hour to go for a walk. But I love my 3 minutes sitting outside having my cup of coffee, particularly now that the weather is so good. And the daylight is amazing for your circadian rhythm as well. So if you can get outside in the daylight early in the morning, particularly if you're struggling with sleep, it's really, really powerful in terms of helping to reset the circadian rhythm. It sort of sounds counterintuitive that doing something in the morning helps you sleep in the evening, but that sun on your skin can be really, really powerful too, which kind of brings me to sleep. So sleep affects every single thing in your life, your appetite, your mood, your energy, your ability to focus, just your motivation and your general kind of get up and go. So, and unfortunately, sleep can be one of those symptoms that can be really, really common, particularly early in perimenopause, as we start to lose that lovely calming progesterone. So again, really simple things to help manage your sleep. Make sure your room is dark enough. If you can not be on your phone for the half an hour or an hour before bed. I know we're all guilty of the scroll, but that hour before bed, just kind of removing that blue light in the sort of hour before bedtime can be really powerful. I find writing a to-do list for the next day is really, really great for sleep as well, because sometimes we lie down in bed and we have all these things we know we need to do the next day. So it either stops us from getting to sleep straight away, or we wake up in the middle of the night and we have these things going around in our head. But if you've written it all down, it's out of the head. You can, and you know, when you get up tomorrow, you're not going to forget it, because I know if I don't write things down, I forget them sometimes too. But it's there on in black and white, and you can just pick it up the next day. So you kind of don't have that niggle in the back of the head. Can be really powerful for sleep.
Yeah, exactly. Actually had that last night after having had a couple of lovely relaxing days. I suddenly woke in the middle of the night, and often the anxiety that comes to me is, have I taken my medication that I'm meant to take? And I got up, and my kind of sensible mind was kind of going, I'm sure you have, just write it down in a post-it and get back into bed. So I did, I wrote it down in a post-it. And of course I got up this morning going, what was I thinking? That was ridiculous.
It's funny what wakes you.
Yeah, but at least I had those strategies. And I've also found lately that doing a gratitude practice and a visualization of my goal going to bed really helps as well. But so I've interrupted you there.
Ahead. No, absolutely. But it is just those little things. And what works for one is not going to work for another. So it is about sort of a little bit of trial and error, figuring out what works for you and what helps to just switch off that nervous system, get into your nice rest and digest state, so that when you go to bed, you are that little bit more at ease. Because there is nothing more frustrating than lying in the bed and just watching the minutes tick by on the clock. The last kind of lifestyle piece then that I generally look at with people is exercise. And exercise is massively powerful for lots of reasons, we all know, but particularly when it comes to your brain and or your cognition and your mood. So in terms of mood, exercise triggers the release of these endorphins, these feel-good factors that just kind of give your mood and your energy a little bit of a bolster, and can kind of, you know, give you that little bit of pep in your step in terms of, you know, what you have to do. Really help with focus as well. I find when I do a little bit of movement in the morning, the productivity, the level of productivity is so much more improved, because I can concentrate, I can focus for longer. If you can get outside to do it, you also get the double benefit of that nice bit of daylight in the morning. Strength training in particular is massively important from an insulin sensitivity point of view. So when I was talking earlier about insulin sensitivity, exercise is another one of those little tools we have to really kind of help, you know, counteract the loss of the effect, that beneficial effect of estrogen, by doing a little bit of exercise. And in particular, strength training, building muscle, helps us to be that little bit more sensitive to insulin and help us to regulate the blood sugars a little bit better. The one thing I would say about exercise is I definitely find for myself and also with some of my clients is that the level of intensity, you may need to bring the level of intensity down a little bit. And that's not because you're not able anymore, or your body's not able for it, but actually really high intensity exercise on a regular basis can contribute to your cortisol levels. It is a stressor on the body. And, you know, the cortisol drives inflammation, which again affects your brain. So just bringing the level of intensity down, or only doing a small number of those kind of higher intensity sessions each week, I actually see a big improvement in terms of not just kind of mood and cognition, but also actually in terms of weight loss, because when we're constantly pumping out stress hormones, it can be a little bit more challenging to kind of change your body composition and shift that little bit of weight, if that's kind of a goal that clients are working towards. And exercise obviously makes you feel more tired. You're burning up your energy. So actually a little bit of exercise can really help improve the amount and quality of the sleep that you get too. Just a word of caution, though, some clients find if they work out too close to bedtime, that it raises their cortisol too much, and then it kind of has the opposite effect. So it, again, it's that trial and error, finding out when working out kind of suits you. And it can be anything you like. If you like to dance, if you like to walk, if you like to cycle, whatever it is that floats your boat and that you're happy to get up and do on a regular basis. There's no point in me going and telling someone to go to the gym or run 5K 3 days a week if they absolutely detest it. They're just not going to build a habit around something they don't enjoy. So it is just about finding what lights you up and doing it regularly.
Sure. So thank you for that information, Susan. One of the questions that I'd asked you before this was if you had any resources you might like to share with my audience. And I'm quite interested. The one that you have chosen is how to make 5 midweek lunches ahead of time.
Yes.
So can you tell me what those lunches are?
Yeah. So they can be a little bit mixed and matched, but they kind of are. I kind of have put 5 ideas into the book just to help people get started. So there is a salmon recipe. So that's salmon with sesame seeds, broccoli and tomatoes. The main reason for that is sesame seeds are a good source of phytoestrogens, salmon for your omega-3s, broccoli for fiber, and they're also amazing at helping with detoxifying and eliminating estrogen from the body. And tomatoes are packed with antioxidants and vitamin C. So a kind of nice all-round option. There is a quinoa salad with some roasted veggies, to which you can add things like halloumi, some maybe leftover salmon, some chicken, you know, whatever source of kind of protein, or some beans or whatever, lentils and things to add protein. Again, I chose quinoa because it's not just good in terms of carbohydrate and fiber, but it has that little bit more protein in it than some other grains. So it kind of helps to boost the protein intake. And obviously your roasted veg for your fiber and vitamins, minerals, antioxidants. There was a frittata. Again, eggs, great source of choline, which is amazing for brain health, healthy fats, protein, and you can throw loads and loads of veggies in there. I love a frittata because you can make it in advance. You can eat it hot, you can eat it cold. It can last a couple of days, or you can feed the family with it. So it's really, really lovely. It's great for using up odds and ends of veg that are sitting in the fridge too. I hate waste.
Yeah,
they're great. And again, you could add some of your leftover salmon there if you wanted to boost the protein or add some more healthy fats to it there. Then I did a huevos rancheros. So again, that's like a Mexican beans with eggs in it. So again, eggs for your fats, protein and choline, and the beans for your phytoestrogens, fiber. And there's lots of veggies chopped through that sauce as well. And then I did a burrito bowl, which is kind of like a way of mopping up the leftovers of everything else that's there. So you can kind of use the leftover chicken or salmon, some of the leftover kind of Cajun black beans that we use for the huevos rancheros, the end of your quinoa and roasted veg, and then slice some avocado through it is kind of how I've suggested it. And that just adds that extra layer of healthy fat to that there. And the idea was really so many of my clients, particularly people who work 5 days a week, struggle with having a balanced lunch. You know, they're eating in a canteen or they're grabbing a sandwich in a local deli or shop. So it was kind of a way of how can I prepare something that will do me for the week in a really short space of time. So by kind of picking a few things that you can mix and match with, it just really helps. But I don't know what a chef's opinion of it all is. I'm definitely no chef.
No, it all sounds great. But that's why I was quite interested, because it's exactly what I would try and teach people. It's showing people how you can make things in advance and be prepared and have it easy and tasty and well-balanced. And you've given great descriptions there. So for everyone, definitely go check out that resource in the show notes below. That sounds great. We've about 1 minute left, Susan. The question I always ask people is they could give their 3 top tips to help improve the health of the nation. What would your 3 top tips be?
So my first one is, and I sort of alluded to it, is to keep things simple. So don't overwhelm yourself by trying to do everything all at once. Pick one meal and focus on even one element of it. So maybe you need to have more protein at breakfast. Maybe you need to get more veggies on your dinner plate. Do that, build a habit around it, and then layer in something else and keep going like that. You don't have to have this all or nothing mentality, because I think that's what sets people up to fail. My second would be love your gut, because your gut has an impact on everything. We've talked a lot about kind of mood and brain today, but your immune system, your energy levels, your digestion, very obviously. So anything you can do to support the health of your gut and overall digestion is really important. And the last thing would be include protein at every meal and snack. So any type of protein you enjoy eating, but getting a little bit of protein in there is really, really important, particularly when for us women that are over 40, to help us maintain that muscle mass and build muscle, which has so many short-term and longer-term benefits. Plus, it helps to keep us feeling full for longer after we eat the meal. So it can be beneficial if you're looking for ways to help manage your weight or your blood sugar as well. Fantastic. So they're my top three tips.
Great. So we've got number one, keep it simple. Two, love your gut. And three, include some protein in every meal and snack.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Susan. Would you mind letting people know, how they can get in touch with you?
So I am on Instagram or Facebook. So my handle on both is at Food First Health, all one word, all small letters. Or you can check out my website, which is www.foodfirsthealth.ie. Or you can email me at susan@foodfirsthealth.ie. So any of those, I'm happy to answer any questions people have, or if they'd like to chat about what's going on with them and see how maybe I might be able to help them address any challenges.
Perfect. And often you go into companies and do like lunch and learn talks as well.
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah, I love working with groups. So I do one-to-one work. I do a group perimenopause program a few times a year. I absolutely go into companies, schools, etc., to talk nutrition and female health and hormones.
Super. Well, thank you so much, Susan.
Thank you so much. I was delighted to be asked.
Thanks so much for listening to today's podcast on Cook, Eat, Nourish with me, Fiona Staunton of Fiona's Food for Life. I'd really appreciate if you would subscribe, rate and review the podcast to help spread the word. And if you pop over to my website, fionasfoodforlife.ie, you'll find lots of recipes, videos, inspiration and upcoming courses. Thanks a million.